We have strapped ourselves in today for a deep dive that honestly feels less like exploring computer components and more like reading the plans for a new particle accelerator.
It really does.
We're talking about the sheer, unadulterated technological audacity of the RTX 5090.
We've been provided with a fascinating stack of sources, detailed engineering analyses, market intelligence on NVIDIA's next flagship. If you are wondering where the absolute limit of consumer graphics power currently sits, well, these materials pretty much define it.
Exactly. So our mission today is to unpack the blueprints for this Blackwell architecture, the GB202, and really analyze the core conflict here. Is this leap forward a moment of pure engineering genius?
Or is it something else?
Or is it simply a case of brute force performance creating an absolute logistical and thermal nightmare for the end user? We need to figure out if this card is a masterpiece or a migraine.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's start with the foundation. This level of performance has to start deep down in the silicon, the core chip itself. What is the fundamental technical achievement here that allows this card to even exist?
It all begins with the GB202 silicon, which is the heart of the 5090. This chip is built on a custom TSMC 4N process. Now, you should think of this as a highly refined version of the latest 3nm class technology. The density they've achieved is, it's unprecedented.
So we're talking about just cramming more transistors in than ever before.
We are seeing transistor counts that just defy previous scaling expectations. It's really something else.
And when you look at those transistor counts, what does that actually translate to in terms of the raw, quantifiable muscle the GPU can flex?
So the sources are kind of coalescing around a rumored 24,576 CUE die cores.
Wow.
And let's put that in perspective for you. The previous generation's top dog, the 4090, had 16,384.
So a huge jump.
We're talking about a leap of roughly 33% more core processing units packed onto that single piece of silicon. One analysis put it perfectly, I think.
Go on.
The engineers have essentially figured out how to fit a substantial part of a modern data center's computational power onto a single consumer-accessible graphics card die.
That is a formidable amount of parallel processing power. But my immediate thought is, how do you keep that monster fed?
Right.
If you have over 24,000 workers, they need an incredible supply line of data. If they have to keep running back to the VRAM to fetch instructions, that latency is just going to kill the performance.
Precisely. It's a supply chain issue within the card itself. And to mitigate that, to stop data starvation and minimize the latency hit, the architectural update includes a massive expansion of the L2 cache.
It's expected to double, right? To 128 megabytes.
That's the number we're seeing, a full doubling to 128 megabytes.
And for the listener, why does doubling the L2 cache matter more than, say, just putting faster VRAM on it? How does that feel different when you're actually in a game?
Well, because the L2 cache is right there next to the cores. It's the fastest memory on the entire card, period. If the data the GPU needs is in that L2 cache, the speed increase is astronomical compared to fetching it from the main VRAM banks.
So it's all about reducing travel time for the data.
Exactly. The key takeaway for you is that this expansion reduces latency, and that directly impacts frame consistency. It smooths out those crucial 1% low frame rates, especially in complex open-world games or, scenarios where your CPU might be struggling. That responsiveness is often what makes a system feel truly fluid, not just the max frame rate.
Okay, so we have the genius side, massive cores, smart architectural refinement to keep everything responsive. But now we have to face the inevitable trade-off. This level of complexity and clock speed demands a massive energy budget. Let's talk about the 600-watt price tag, which is the elephant in the room in all of these source materials.
It truly is. We are looking at an average sustained thermal design power, or TDP, of 600 watts.
Just to put that in context.
To put that in context, that is more power than what powered the entire high-end PC system of maybe 5 years ago, your whole computer.
And we're on a newer, theoretically more efficient process node. So why are we seeing such a massive jump in power consumption? Where is all that extra juice going?
It's the drive for absolute maximum clock frequency. The leaks suggest boost clocks are routinely pushing past 2.9 gigahertz right out of the box.
Potentially even hitting 3.0 gigahertz.
Potentially. And this is where the physics of silicon really start to work against you. It's critical to understand the exponential cost.
Explain that exponential curve for us.
Okay, think of it like this. Getting your car to 100 miles per hour requires X amount of fuel. But getting it from 180 to 200 miles per hour might require three times the fuel just to overcome that last bit of aerodynamic resistance. Voltage and frequency scaling works the same way.
So you're paying a much higher price for those last few percentage points of performance.
A much higher price. The analysis states that to gain the last 5 to 10% of raw clock performance, you have to burn 30% or more power, because the voltage needed to keep it stable at those high frequencies increases exponentially.
So NVIDIA is just brute forcing that final 10% boost to claim the performance crown.
That seems to be the strategy, yes.
And that leads directly to the massive real-world headache for the user: power stability. 600 watts is the average, but anyone who remembers the last generation knows the real danger isn't the average load.
No, it's the instantaneous spike.
Exactly.
We have to talk about transient spikes. These are microsecond power bursts where the GPU instantaneously pulls current far, far above its average TBP.
So with a 600W average, these spikes could hit, what, 1,000 watts?
Analysts are warning that these transient spikes could theoretically hit 1,000W or even 1,200W for fractions of a second.
And if you don't have a modern power supply, what happens in that microsecond?
Well, that instantaneous doubling of demand is exactly what trips overcurrent protection, or OCP, on older power supplies.
And OCP is the emergency brake.
It's the PSU's internal safety. It detects a sudden massive surge, and it just shuts the whole unit down to prevent damage. So your system immediately crashes.
So what makes the newer, you know, the recommended ATX 3.1 power supplies capable of handling a 1,200-watt burst when an older 1,000-watt unit might just crash?
It comes down to capacitor banks and responsiveness. The ATX 3.1 standard specifically mandates that the PSU must be able to handle 200% of its rated power for short durations.
Okay.
They use beefier, faster capacitors that can discharge that massive surge instantly without tripping the safety mechanisms. They essentially cushion that shock for the rest of your PC.
Okay, so that handles the electrical threat. But all that energy has to go somewhere. 600 watts means 600 joules of heat generated every single second. We are clearly pushing the physical limits of air cooling.
We are at the wall. To dissipate that immense heat load, the heatsink required needs a vast, just immense surface area. The physical size of the card is a direct consequence of trying to manage 600 watts of heat.
And that means you can't just slack this in any case.
No, you need a highly optimized cooling solution in your case to move that heat away from the component and crucially out of the chassis.
And if your cooling is insufficient, what's the real-world consequence?
The analysis warns that if the airflow in your case isn't rigorously managed, a 1590 will elevate the ambient temperature of your entire chassis dramatically.
So it's not just the GPU that throttles.
Exactly. It thermally throttles your other components, primarily your CPU and your RAM. Your CPU might drop its boost clocks because the air flowing over its own cooler is too hot.
So you slow down your entire system despite just installing the fastest graphics card in the world.
That's the irony, yes.
So this card is demanding massive power, it's volatile, it generates enormous heat. Let's move to safety, because the previous generation had a very public, fiery issue with melting power connectors.
Yes.
What infrastructure changes are being implemented for the 5090?
This is perhaps the most necessary infrastructure upgrade. NVIDIA has fully adopted the revised ATX 3.1 standard, specifically featuring the new 12V2x6 connector.
And this was designed precisely to stop what happened before.
It was designed precisely to eliminate the connection failures we saw previously.
But how does this new connector actually guarantee safety against a physical failure like melting? Is it just thicker wires, or is it a fundamental design change?
It's a remarkably smart design change based on physical geometry.
Okay.
The critical design inversion is this. The main power pins are now slightly longer, while the four necessary sense pins, those are the sideband signals that tell the GPU the connection is seated, are shorter.
Ah, I see. So the difference in pin length creates a fail-safe. Walk us through how that mechanism works.
Okay, so if the cable is not plugged in 100% flush, say, if it's slightly angled or wiggled out a bit.
Which happens.
All the time.
Yeah.
Those short sense pins will not make contact. The GPU firmware detects this open circuit on the sense pins, and critically, it cuts power delivery completely.
So it just won't turn on?
It simply won't turn on or draw any meaningful current. This hardware-level lockout demands a perfect, high-integrity physical connection before it will allow 600 watts to flow.
Which should prevent the high-resistance arcs that cause the meltdowns.
That's the entire idea. It's a crucial layer of physical safety.
That is a fundamental safety improvement. Okay, let's pivot back to speed, because all this core count and power requires a memory pipeline that can keep up. And we're looking at the debut of a major new memory standard here.
Yes. What's fascinating here is the leap to GDDR7 memory. If you thought GDDR6X was fast, GDDR7 is operating in a whole new dimension, and it is absolutely required to feed those 24,000-plus cores.
So what kind of sheer data throughput are we anticipating?
We are seeing speeds hitting 32 Gbps per pin on what is rumored to be a 512-bit bus.
Wow.
And when you multiply that out, it leads to a total memory bandwidth of approximately 1.8 terabytes per second.
That's not just an incremental increase.
No, that is nearly doubling the throughput of the previous generation.
Double the throughput, almost double the cores. But while that spells exceptional performance for 8K gaming, the sources are pointing to another massive strategic driver for this hardware.
The VRAM capacity.
Exactly.
Yeah, the card is expected to ship with 32 GB of VRAM. While, yes, that is absolutely over spec for most traditional gaming titles today.
For now, anyway.
For now. This capacity, combined with that extreme GDDR7 speed, is the holy grail for local AI generation and large language model work.
Explain that for us. Running a 70 billion parameter llama model locally, what does that actually allow a prosumer or small startup to do that they just couldn't do with a, say, a 4090?
Well, for large language models, the VRAM capacity is often the hard limit, not the core count. A 70 billion parameter model is one of the larger, most complex models out there.
And it has to fit entirely in memory.
The entire structure, its parameters, its weights, must fit into the GPU memory to run efficiently. At 32 GB, you can run a model of that size entirely in VRAM. This means instant, private, high-speed inferences without paying per-token API costs to cloud services.
So it fundamentally shifts the economics for researchers and developers.
It does. It makes this card desirable not just for gamers, but for an entirely new industrial user base.
And that provides a huge market pressure, which we'll get to in a moment. But first, let's talk about the physical reality. We've established this card is a massive technical achievement. But physically, how do you even house this thing?
The sheer physical demands are huge. Founders Edition leaks strongly suggest a massive four-slot design. It is extremely thick, long, and heavy. This is a crucial practical point for anyone looking to upgrade.
How heavy are we talking, and what are the real risks of installing a component that massive?
The card is estimated to weigh around 3 kilograms, so about 6.6 pounds.
That's a lot of weight hanging off a motherboard.
It's a structural hazard for your typical motherboard. The source material warns that installing it horizontally without a robust support bracket is approaching negligence.
You could actually break your motherboard.
You are placing so much leverage on the card that you seriously risk bending or even ripping the reinforced PCIe slot right off your motherboard over time. You should fully expect industrial-grade support stands to be bundled with every single one of these cards.
And if you're a small form factor builder?
If you have any small form factor cases, especially Mini ITX, you should simply abandon hope now. It's not going to happen.
So it's large, it's hot, it's power hungry, and it's heavy. Now let's talk market reality and price. When a component is this complex, this expensive to make, and provides this level of performance, what does a lack of competition do to the price tag?
The market reality is straightforward. NVIDIA has a total monopoly on the high end.
Right. AMD has basically bowed out of the Halo product race for this generation.
They've officially pivoted their RDNA 4 architecture to target the mid-range and the efficiency sweet spot. They specifically stated they are not competing for the performance crown.
So no competition means NVIDIA dictates the terms. What are analysts projecting for the MSRP?
Analysts are predicting an MSRP that will land somewhere between $1,999 and $2,499.
Oof.
But the financial hurdle is only the first step because of the immense power this card provides for those critical AI workloads we just discussed.
The prosumers and startup.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those people are going to buy these cards in bulk to build small local clusters. So if you want one on launch day, you are not just competing with other gamers.
You're fighting against dedicated, deep-pocketed tech startups.
You really are.
Which creates an artificial shortage and drives up street prices dramatically, even if the MSRP starts near 2000. So let's summarize the ultimate logistical requirement. For anyone who manages to secure one, what does the power supply need to look like?
The guidance from the engineering materials is clear and, frankly, unforgiving. The absolute minimum recommended PSU is 1,000 watts.
And that's only if you're careful with your other components.
That's only if you pair the card with a very low power consumption CPU. The standard recommended baseline is a 1200-watt ATX 3.1 unit.
Yeah.
And again, you must ensure it features a native 12V 2x6 cable, not an adapter.
And for the true enthusiasts, the ones who want maximum thermal headroom, maybe to overclock, or just to run a quiet system where the PSU fan rarely spins up,
they should be looking at a 1600-watt titanium-rated power supply.
Mm-hmm.
That gives you maximum headroom ensures silence, and protects against even the most violent transient spikes.
So the takeaway is that this is not just a graphics card you plug in.
The core conclusion from the analysis is that this is not a graphics card for a casual plug-and-play upgrade. This is a component that demands you treat your entire system infrastructure. Your case, your power supply, your motherboard, like a high-performance mini server rack.
That brings us to the end of this deep dive. We've confirmed the RTX 5090 is an engineering marvel, achieving unprecedented computational power through equally unprecedented power consumption, component density, and sheer physical size.
It's a technological leap, but one that comes with a very long list of prerequisites.
So what does this all mean for the enthusiast who manages to secure one?
We spend all our time in the PC building community focusing on the components inside the computer case.
Yeah.
You know, the GPU, the CPU, the PSU rating.
Mm.
But the RTX 5090 demands a total reevaluation of the home electrical infrastructure itself. If you're drawing 600W continuously, the real challenge is ensuring your home's electrical wiring and your wall outlets, which were probably designed 30 years ago for light bulbs, and a TV, are robust enough to handle a single device demanding this much sustained power.
In a non-server environment.
Exactly. So this raises an important question. When does the pursuit of high-end consumer technology require us to stop looking at the wattage number on the PSU and start inspecting the dedicated 20-amp circuit breaker in the basement? That is the real preparedness challenge facing the high-end PC builder today.